right now, trans voices are so important. You know, they're trying to deny that we exist. And so to let us speak, to hear our voices, to hear what we have to say, I think is absolutely crucial. If you can motivate people and get them okay with persecuting one group of people, you can get them okay with persecuting other groups of people.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Daniel Wasillas. The U.S. Navy throws trans sailors and Marines overboard. Colorado's conversion therapy ban goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. And a trans philosopher fights oppression. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 15th, 2025. The U.S. Department of the Navy's plan to expel Navy and Marine Corps personnel with a history of gender dysphoria are in high gear. New guidelines ordering the involuntary separations of trans service members after March 28th were announced just a day after a federal judge and a Trump administration lawyer clashed over the policy. A March 26th deadline for voluntary separations had already been declared. Waivers may be considered, but only for applicants who have lived for 3 years as their birth assigned sex and who never have and will not attempt to transition. Navy Secretary Terrence Emmert echoed the Trump administration's stance in his memo, saying, "The Department of the Navy recognizes two sexes, male and female. An individual's sex is immutable and unchanging during a person's life." Meanwhile, U.S. District Judge Ana C. Reyes sharply criticized the administration's justification for the policy in a hearing earlier in the week. The openly lesbian judge appointed by President Joe Biden presides over one of two legal challenges to the ban. Reyes chastised the government for its failure to provide evidence that transgender service members negatively impact military readiness. In her words, "The question in this case is whether the military, under the equal protections rights afforded to every American under the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment, if the military can do that and targeting a specific medical issue that impacts a specific group that the administration disfavors." Reyes is expected to issue a preliminary injunction against enforcement of the ban by March 19th. That would be more than a week ahead of the Navy Department's separation deadlines for transgender enlistees.
I first want to start off and say, at its very core, drag is art.
Transgender Representative Zoe Zephyr was eloquent this week when the Montana State House was considering whether to label drag performances inherently sexual.
Drag is a beautiful art. Drag has a deep history in this country, and it is a history that is important to my community. You know, if you are wearing, if you are a woman in this body wearing a suit today, you are challenging gender norms that existed long ago. And in some ways, drag does work to challenge those norms.
The proposed legislation would have mandated fines of up to $5,000 per performance and allowed parents or guardians to sue drag performers for allegedly harming their children.
Drag story hours I have been to here in Montana, they are like Disney princesses reading to people. We had people come in and talk about this. These are spaces where people come up and they sit down in libraries and parents elect to bring their children and learn about books and the love of reading and also, yes, be involved in part and be and to hear stories told from members of my community. That is important and that is beautiful, and I do not think that we should be standing up and saying that this art form, because it's somehow connected to my community, is not allowed.
After listening to Montana Transgender State Representative Zoe Zephyr, 13 Republicans joined all the Democrats to reject House Bill 675. The final tally was 44 in favor and 55 against, with one Republican absent.
Colorado's ban on conversion therapy is going to the United States Supreme Court. Plaintiff Kaylee Childs is a licensed professional counselor in Colorado Springs, arguing that the ban violates the free speech and free exercise clauses of the First Amendment. Her original 2022 filing claims that under the law she is forced to deny voluntary counseling that fully explores sexuality and gender to her clients and potential clients in violation of her and her clients' sincerely held religious beliefs. Virtually every professional medical and mental health organization in the country disagrees with Childs. They've all discredited the assertions of religious practitioners that sexual orientation or gender identity can be changed through counseling and prayer. They find the so-called therapy to be ineffective at best and at worst, life-threatening. Lower courts have ruled that the state has the power to set healthcare policies and regulate its professional providers, and that the law does not infringe on free speech, as Childs alleges. An appeals court subsequently backed those decisions. Childs is represented by the Religious Right Alliance Defending Freedom, which the Southern Poverty Law Center has designated as an anti-LGBTQ hate group. The Supreme Court is expected to hear this case during its next term, which begins in October. Colorado is one of 23 states and the District of Columbia that bans conversion therapy. A high court ruling in favor of Childs could effectively overturn all of them.
Australians are highly opposed to transgender people being scapegoated for political purposes, according to a new poll commissioned by Equality Australia. The country's leading queer advocacy group released its data as right-wing billionaire Clive Palmer pushes his transphobic campaign ads. The Redbridge Group polling was conducted between February 3rd and 7th with a sample of 1,013 Australians aged 18 and older. Among its key findings, 91% of the respondents agree or strongly agree that transgender people should have the freedom and choice to live their lives in ways that make them happy. 81% agree or strongly agree that trans people deserve the same rights and protections as other Australians. 86% agree or strongly agree that trans issues should not be part of the political dialogue during the federal election campaign. And 89% agree or strongly agree that LGBTQ people deserve to live with dignity and respect. Redbridge director Tony Berry said, "Australian voters are in the market for policies on cost of living relief, housing, and public and private health. The major parties cannot allow themselves to go off message with self-indulgent culture wars because that's the dog that isn't barking." Equality Australia CEO Anna Brown, "It's clear from this polling that the vast majority of Australians don't want to see trans people used as a political punching bag." Trans Equality Council Chair Teddy Cook confirmed the obvious, saying, "This polling shows that what is important to the Australian public is the cost of living and not trans lives. Trans people are busy contributing to our communities and getting on with our lives. Talking about gender and obsessing about a vulnerable 1% of the population won't help pay the bills or find a home."
Finally, the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Relations Subcommittee became a battleground against Republican resistance to the existence of transgender people this week.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Subcommittee Chair Keith Self kicked off his hearings with an insult to the country's first transgender congressperson, Sarah McBride. McBride swiped back at the Texas congressman's intentional offense. Then, her fellow Democrat and ranking member Bill Keating of Massachusetts stepped in to rebuke Chairman Self.
Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Yes, we have set the standard on the floor of the House, and I'm simply...
What is that standard, Mr. Chairman? Would you repeat what you just said when you introduced a duly elected representative from the United States of America, please?
I will. The representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Mr. Chairman, you are out of order. Mr. Chairman, have you no decency? I've come to know you a little bit, but this is not decent.
We will continue this hearing.
You will not continue it with me unless you introduce a duly elected representative the right way.
This hearing is adjourned.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending March 15th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The right wing has come to use the expression gender ideology as a slur, as a way to portray gender identity as a position to be debated instead of an intrinsic human characteristic. It's their weapon against transgender people in particular. Transgender philosophy is the perfect deterrent, expertly wielded by Talia Mae Boettcher. Boettcher is a professor at California State University, Los Angeles, where she chaired the philosophy department from 2012 to 2018. She also directed the Center for the Study of Genders and Sexualities. An activist as well as an academic, Boettcher has served on the Los Angeles Human Relations Commission's Transgender Advisory Council and with a policy working group on trans community relations for the Los Angeles Police Department. This Way Out's Tanya Kane Perry asked Boettcher to explain her core message.
Because your work is really about identity and trans philosophy, as you've mentioned in prior conversations we've had. Before we jump into current events, I'd love to learn a little bit more about what is trans philosophy. What does that mean?
So first of all, Tanya, thank you. Thank you for having me on your program. And I really appreciate the opportunity because... like right now, trans voices are so important. You know, they're trying to deny that we exist. Yeah. And so to let us speak, to hear our voices, to hear what we have to say, I think is absolutely crucial. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that people define trans philosophy in different ways. And I define it very simply. I define it as philosophizing in resistance to trans oppression. And you might ask yourself, well, what does philosophy have to do with resistance to oppression?
Exactly.
When you experience oppression, the world gets turned upside down. And people tell you that this is what common sense is. So there's a sense in which what is passed off as common sense doesn't make any sense at all. And you're trying to figure things out, and life is not making any sense to you, and you're not provided with the right concepts or tools to make sense of things. All right, enter philosophy, right? And so philosophy sometimes can provide an illuminating function. It can provide you with the tools to like, okay, how am I going to make sense of this? How am I going to try to make sense of like this chaos, right? And so I think that philosophy can do that. philosophy, when used in particular ways, can be liberatory. Mm. And I think that trans philosophy can be liberatory. It is used usually by trans people, but also by trans allies to uncover and to illuminate, sometimes often to expose, you know, the ruses of oppression and to show us what's really going on.
Mm. So if we take, let's say, some of these insane executive orders saying trans women can no longer participate in women's sports, how then from a trans philosophy do you look at that to unpack that, to make sense of that, to go, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. This is oppressive.
Well, so first of all, I would say that's not what the executive order says, right? It says, I can't remember the exact words, but it has to do with preventing men from participating in women's sports.
Okay.
So, and this is the way they always gloss it. So the primary move is to say that trans women are men.
Okay.
And that's what they're doing in all cases.
Got it.
And so for me, you know, a lot of my research has been all about looking at that.
Mm.
So for me, like, you know, there's a primary form of transphobia that I call reality enforcement.
Mm.
And so, you know, trans folk are very much concerned about misgendering. And misgendering is sort of, you know, the application of concepts like man and woman, you know, in ways that go against a trans person's self-identity. So if you call a trans woman a man or a trans man a woman or a non-binary person anything other than non-binary, as misgendering. But so for me, I wanted to look beyond the categories. I was very interested in ways in which trans people were viewed as, so for example, really a man disguised as a woman or really a man pretending to be a woman. Notice the really, so you get this appearance and reality contrast.
Right.
Well, as a philosopher, we love appearance and reality, really gets us going. Except the appearance and reality thing sort of sets it up so that trans people are either viewed as deceivers, pretending that we're something that we're not, or that we're pretending to be something that we're not.
Mm.
And so what I realized is that what the appearance is our public gender presentation.
Okay.
And what the reality is, and this is really interesting, what the reality is sort of the imagined genital status.
Mm.
What really got me onto this is when I was focused on extreme cases of transphobic violence.
Mm.
What often happens is that trans people find themselves, you know, sort of exposed, their pants are pulled down, grabbed between their legs, right? Now, notice you're shaking your head, right? Because what you're noticing is that this is a violation, right?
Yeah,
it's a violation.
It's bodily violation,
right,
absolutely.
Right. Okay, so because we think that genitals have boundaries on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a way in which genitals are private parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And this is one of the things that got me thinking. So genitals constitute the reality.
Mm.
Mm. Okay. So what I think the reality is for them, for these folks who want to say that trans women are men, has ultimately to do with private parts.
Mm.
Now, they want to say that it has to do with chromosomes, gonads, all this kind of thing.
Mm.
But I think that it has to do with private parts.
Mm. So what do we do with this, right? So we understand this arbitrary moral panic. How do we, as community, do something about this?
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Brace yourself for Cal State University professor Talia Mae Boettcher's bold answer about what the queer community can do now.
If we were going to start planning kind of like, you know, radical actions, like really radical actions, and I was, you know, playing around with like, how can we like, I mean, we live in California, still a more or less kind of safe state, you know, but like if we were dealing with like, you know, like bathroom kind of laws and stuff like that, I think it would be interesting for non-trans women to start using the men's restroom, for instance.
As a way of protesting this whole idea of gender and genderized bathrooms and all of that, right?
Right. And just start really messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
In states in which trans women are sort of their boundaries are considered male, they should technically be allowed to go around topless, right?
Right. Right, exactly. If they're
considered male. Of course, the anti-trans Nazis probably will use it against them anyway.
Right, of course. Because
but of course, like, if they're supposed to use male changing rooms, then presumably they should be allowed to go topless. So then they should be allowed to be... I don't know. But my point is, like,
we've got to find ways,
and I also think, like, you know, like, if, like, trans guys really started to use the women's restroom, like, I'm talking, like, you know, like, seriously, have they ever really thought this through? Like, you know, heavily testosterone.
Well, and the attack seems to be repeatedly on trans women.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, I rarely hear anyone talk about trans men.
We're back to the phase where it's all and only trans women who are visible and trans men who are utterly erased.
And how did that happen, or why is that happening again? Like,
I mean, it used to be that way. Then I think there was a period in which, like, you know, there was a greater visibility for individuals who are, like, trans masculine of center, mm-hmm, in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's sort of like, I think that when you have a transphobic model of trans people, it just always seems to collapse into this sort of, on the one hand, erasure and invisibilization of, like, trans masculine individuals,
mm-hmm,
and then trans women and trans femme individuals are sort of like get this really toxic visibility.
Why do you think that is?
Well, on the one hand, I think because you have already the hypervisibility of feminine gender presentation, mm-hmm, right, which is already marked, mm, and sexualized,
mm, right?
Right. In a straight culture, let's,
mm-hmm,
say,
mm-hmm,
right? In a queer culture, it's going to be different.
Mm.
But sort of mainstream heterosexual culture,
right,
you're going to have marked femme presentation.
Right.
And that's going to be titillating,
mm,
right? And then also in a sort of heterosexual context, sort of like the ultimate taboo in terms of nudity,
mm,
is full frontal male,
mm,
right?
Mm.
So you put those two together, that's one of the reasons, I think. I think it's probably more complicated, but that's one reason.
Mm. Wow, fascinating. And so I love this idea of allies, like, you know, femme-presenting women going in and using male bathrooms, and, mm-hmm, likewise, allies who are presenting as male going into women's, mm-hmm, bathrooms, right, and challenging all that. In an earlier conversation you and I had, you stated that trans folks are the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that?
There may be particular issues concerning trans people that those who are pushing Project 2025 are concerned about. But obviously, they're not going to stop with trans people.
Right.
You know, how trans people fare, you know, how we go, that we're sort of like, we're like a test case.
Right.
Right? And, you know, already they're talking about, you know, overturning, you know, doing, test case for, like, same-sex marriage.
Right.
Right? So that's next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're already trying to divide, you know, LGBT folks against trans folks. But once they have, you know, trans folks safely put away,
mm-hmm,
the next move was definitely going to be LGBT folks.
Yeah. So, in a sense, if we don't fight for trans people and trans rights, whoever we are, we're essentially all putting ourselves at danger.
Right. They're going to go, I mean, I would say, and not just LGBT folks, they're going to go after women.
They're going to go after contraception and women.
Right.
And
exactly. They're going to go after Griswold. I mean,
yeah,
of course.
They're going to go, next thing I know, we won't have our own bank accounts.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to be, you know, Handmaid's Tale. But
yeah,
you won't be able to flee to Canada because that's going to be the 51st state.
There you go. Exactly. So again, that's why it's so important for me that we're having this conversation, because when we recognize this is the canary in the coal mine, this is the alarm going off, and this is a chance for all of us to push back now and save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whether you feel like a super fan of trans people or not, regardless, you need to be out there. Because this is about, at the end of the day, everybody.
Trans people are low-hanging fruit. We're very easy. There's not that many of us.
Right.
It's easy to go, like, to do the transphobic slur, oh my God, you have these men putting on wigs and they're like beating up on women on these sports teams, right? It's very easy to do the, like, the South Park caricature,
right,
and get people mad,
yeah,
and distort the reality of the actual experience of trans women.
Right.
And it's very easy to vilify then trans people and then to start persecuting them.
Right.
And but it's like a test case. Yeah. If you can motivate people and get them okay with persecuting one group of people, mm-hmm. you can get them okay with persecuting other groups of people.
Exactly.
And that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think that, you know, people have drawn these analogies. I mean, it's not the first time in history that trans people have been persecuted.
Right.
I mean, trans people were persecuted, you know, in Nazi Germany.
Exactly.
Right. And one of the things that, you know, I will say as a trans Canadian living in the U.S., mm. I don't find it strange that trans people are being persecuted. I will say, you must surely realize that what is happening in this country is not normal. And so take what is happening to trans people in a larger context.
Right.
When you have a president who says he wants to annex Canada, please realize that what is happening is not normal. When the only movies that have ever been about the U.S. invading Canada, there have been two that I know of, have been comedies. And he is seriously promising an economic war with the plan of ultimately invading Canada. And this is something that the federal government of Canada is taking seriously
yes.
as a real threat.
Yes.
I say to you, you have to take this seriously. This is not normal. That you must then take the threat on trans people within that political context and realize that this is no joke.
Right. Exactly.
Can I also say that really bodes ill for my plan of escape?
Right, because your plan of escape was to go home to Canada. Yes. And that's not going to work out anymore. Yeah, right. You're not the only one. Lots of people are actually talking about ways to leave.
No, most all of my friends that I know of are talking about, like, plan B, how to get out of the country.
Right, yeah.
Never ask for no one's philosophy. It's obvious, so proud of me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Cal State Los Angeles University philosophy professor Talia Mae Boettcher's new book will be out this week. It's called Beyond Personhood, an Essay in Trans Philosophy, published by University of Minnesota Press. She was interviewed for This Way Out by Tanya Kane Perry. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Tanya Kane Perry and Michael LeBeau, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Tanya Kane Perry. Van Morrison, Shea Diamond, and CJ Beards performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Ivana Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Daniel Wasias. Thanks for listening, online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on Fresh FM, Nelson Tasman Blenheim Eastern Golden Bay, New Zealand, KTAL, Las Cruces, New Mexico, WTND, Macomb, Illinois, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.